And welcome to the Linux Journal Insider for issue number 194. We're talking about distributions this month. This is the June 2010 issue, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think it's June 2010. I'm here, Sean Powers, and also with me, as usual, is Kyle Rankin. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. And now we are still a whole country apart, but that's going to change in just a couple days. We're going to head to PenguinCon here in my home state, in Michigan.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. I can't remember whether this is my fourth or fifth PenguinCon that I've been to, but every year it seems like it keeps getting better. It definitely keeps becoming a bigger and bigger conference. I think they had to change hotels again this year because the last hotel won't be big enough for the crowd this year.
That's very possible. Now, I've been at this hotel. I was trying to remember earlier today what I've been there for. It's in Troy, Michigan. It's at the Marriott, and I can't remember what conference I was at there. But yes, that's where it's at this year. And Kyle, you'll be there. I'll be there, and Bill Childers will be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun, along with a lot of other people. It's not just us. While that'd be fun, it wouldn't be quite a con.
Although all of us have our share of talks, so if you look at the percentage, it's going to be a pretty Linux dominated scene there. Linux Journal dominated scene.
That's true. I mean, I think I'm on. I have two talks and two panels. I think both panels I'm on are you're on too. So
right, yes, and I same for here. So same here. So I have two talks, and then I have the panels with you. So
yep, and Bill's on a panel with us, and Bill's got a talk or two, I think.
He has three talks, actually.
Three talks, yeah. So
three talks, yeah.
You're right, Linux Journal all the time. All right, anyway, this month we have distributions, which is pretty cool. And if you don't know what distributions are, you're in luck, because the first article we're going to talk about is by Jess Fraser, and she talks about a brief history, distributions, a brief history. And it's actually a very thorough history of Linux as a kernel and as it evolved into a distribution. I have to admit, when I read it, I realized that I didn't know much about Linux, apparently, because it's very in-depth, goes through all the things, you know, from the history starting with Minix, and it's a fascinating article and very in-depth. So, yeah, lots of trivia questions, if nothing else in there.
Yeah, I got a lot out of the article, too. I thought it was really cool. Even if you think that you have a decent background on where your distribution comes from, especially if you're using any major distribution, you'll find some reference to where it came from there. Like I didn't realize – I knew a fair amount about, for example, Red Hat's history, but I didn't realize the whole initial sort of co-op with the other distribution, with some of the other distributions and stuff. So yeah, I thought it was it's a really good intro for all the other articles we're talking about.
It is. And, an intro to Linux in general. You were mentioning before the podcast that this is kind of the issue if somebody's new to Linux or they're not sure what it's all about, or you just want them to stop asking you questions about it. Not that you would ever want to stop talking about Linux, but you can hand them this and it really gives them the full history and keeps them up to date and they'll understand the whole kit and caboodle. But that will lead us into distribution specifically, not just the history of Linux, and I'll let you take over there.
All right, yeah. So this next article that we're talking about is called Philosophy and Fancy, and it's by Dan Sawyer. And basically what it goes over is now that you know the history of Linux distributions and what started them all, this article is more like an anthropology document. And of course it talks about philosophy as well, but what it really goes over is the different philosophies that each of the distributions take. And he starts defining some categories. So, for instance, one category is distributions that follow Richard Stallman's concept of free software. And so these would be distributions that really only include free software, or at least default to only allowing free software in them. And then anything else you need, you have to get from some other source. And then another philosophy would be one that's like a commercial distribution that has GPL software in it, but talks about, but is willing to have have a lot of commercial software in it as well. And then he also has some other categories, like one that is sort of a blend between the two. And then he goes in detail about, you know, how a lot of these distributions take those philosophies and then apply them to how they organize their distribution. So, for instance, he even brings up, whether your package manager installs software to user local or to user, which is something that Bill and I argued about, and I feel that I won a couple issues back.
Yes, and I think that you won because it doesn't even mention opt in this article. But yeah, so this is an article that talks about the a lot, you know, largely what the reasons for the different types of distributions are. You know, why are there so many? Well, there's some really good reasons why in this article. And different, I'm trying to think of a great segue here, but I don't have one, and I'm excited about this article.
I was thinking something like iron. These distributions have a lot of irons in the fire, or something.
Oh,
like that.
Irons in the fire. Okay, we'll go with that. But I just really want to talk about this article because it's awesome. It's Small Systems and Big Iron: Linux on Non-X86 Computers by Kira Scarlett, and she goes through and talks about the. I mean, you know, most people use an Intel computer, you know, laptops, desktops, but there's other things out there. You know, there's, if Bill were here, he would say what? Spark.
Well, he would love on some Linux on Spark, or really anything on Spark, because it's purple, so he loves it.
Okay, see, exactly. Now, Kira doesn't go into that a whole lot, which is great. But she talks about ARM, which hasn't historically gotten a lot of press, but we were talking before the podcast recently, you know, we hear more and more about it. And I think that's because as their performance goes up, the ARM processor's speed and power goes up, their power consumption really isn't increasing at the same rate. So they're still extremely efficient and becoming more and more powerful. So we're seeing them in not just cell phones and things like that, but we're seeing them in bigger things like tablet-based computers, you know, the whatever's going to dominate over the iPad if it can, you know, it's going to have an ARM processor almost, you know, assuredly, that kind of thing. But not just ARM, or talk about PowerPC. And then the one that I read a couple times, the section I read a couple times was on Itanium, because as geeky as I am, I actually didn't know anything about the Itanium processor, except that it existed and I didn't want to buy it. but it's kind of going out, even though Intel sort of denies that it's not going out of style. I think HP is the biggest seller of the hardware that supports the Itanium processor. But, you know, have you ever used an Itanium processor, Kyle?
I actually haven't. I've seen them as an option when I've been ordering servers and things like that, but I've never made the jump to try those out, so I guess I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't either. I don't know how they feel, if they feel fast, if they feel slow, or, you know, how that goes. But they're kind of going out, so that's, you know, maybe we'll never know. But, you know, like the PowerPC processor, we know, you know, Apple used to use them, and the PlayStation 3 uses them, and they're still in use. They're still a really good CPU, but not quite as common, not even close to as common as the standard Intel processors, which are just still, you know, dominating everywhere. So
yeah, anyway. I mean, Intel's. Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, Intel stuff is pretty much off the charts as far as what processor you're using. Oh, by the way, speaking of charts,
do you want to hear my segue for that one? I was gonna say every distribution supports the Intel processor, but not every one of them supports things like the PowerPC. See, yeah.
Oh yeah, see.
But yours was better. I like yours. Off the charts. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. So speaking of charts. The next article, if you want to really call it an article, it's more a big chart that I want to talk about, is in the middle of the magazine, and it's the Linux distribution chart by Justin Ryan. And I got to say, this is like a really – I mean, I can't imagine the research that went into this, and it also a lot of feedback from Linux Journal readers on this as well. So it's almost like a mini reader's choice in a way, just about distributions, because there's so this chart basically goes over a lot of the major distributions based on reader feedback, and gives you information such as the latest release date, what kind of package format the distribution uses, and other really interesting information. If this is your first time with Linux and you just use one distribution, who knows? Maybe there's so many different choices out there that there's no telling whether there's another distribution that fits your needs better. I know that I've been through who knows how many distributions over the years. So this lays it out in a really easy to follow chart. You can go through and compare and contrast every distribution, every major one at least, with other distributions, and then even see which distributions all the Linux Journal readers use, and also get a lot of cool quotes around the side with different readers talking about the distributions they like.
Yeah, I really like the chart for, you know, a lot of reasons. It's very informative, but also, you know, when you go through a chart like this, sometimes you just want to try one of the other distros that you have never used or you haven't used in a number of years. And, you know, that's kind of what, when I'm looking at the centerfold, as I call it in the current issue, tar.gz, when I'm looking at the centerfold picture here, yeah, there's a couple distros that I now want to try out because, I haven't thought about that in quite a while, you know, that sort of thing. So great job, Justin. It's a very useful and very awesome looking chart. I think people of all ages will enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we need a mailbag sound. You know, like, mail call. I think that was Pee Wee Herman, which is probably gross. Anyway, we're going to reach into the Linux Journal mailbag. And this is a letter to the editor from Alex Conray. It says, it's titled Linux Across the Age Spectrum. This is a great magazine, and I have learned a great deal from it. I can safely say that with the help of this magazine, you made this 14-year-old learn a lot more about Linux, open source, and computer management in general. Gotta say, mad props to you guys. Keep the good news going. I look forward to reading the latest issue. Now, I was, you know, aw, shucks, Alex. I mean, that's a great letter, and it's great to hear. But it made me think, Kyle, when did you start using Linux, and what's your first Linux story?
Okay, well, so like a lot of geeks, I experimented with different operating systems in college. I had a neighbor in the dorms that was like, hey, you got to check out this new operating system. It's called Linux, you know. And I had heard things about Linux, but I was kind of shy and scared to try it out on my own. So a buddy of mine got the floppy disks for Red Hat 5.1. That's how you installed it back then. And he set it up for me in a dual boot scenario on my computer. And at the time, I was really into it because I liked all of the, you know, sort of the command line network troubleshooting tools that it had. So, you know, I mean, I was used to Windows Traceroute, but I liked the Traceroute better. I liked the, you know, Whois and all the other all those tools that Red Hat 5.1 had. So, yeah, that was probably my first experience, and I stuck with Red Hat 5.1 and then 5.2 for quite some time after that. That sort of was my go-to distro.
I see. It was about the same time frame for me, but I was out of college because I'm a little older than you. in college, we got the 9600 baud serial ports installed into the rooms, and that was just amazingly faster than the 2400 baud modems we were using. But my first introduction to Linux was Red Hat, of course. Back then, that's pretty much what you used unless you were a hardcore Linux geek. If you were just starting out, Red Hat was the way to go. And it was after that horrible car accident I had. So I was at home, unemployed, having, you know, a head injury. It was really messed up, and I couldn't afford anything at all, and Linux happened to be free. So that's really how I got started. You know, so people that are upset when you claim, oh, Linux is free, it doesn't cost anything. I don't know if you've ever had people scold you for touting that it doesn't cost anything, but doggone it, that's the reason I got started. So, and then shortly after that, I tried Mandrake, now Mandriva, and that was my distro for a couple of different releases. And then once I discovered Debian, I never went back, and I still don't consider myself going back because I'm an Ubuntu user, but I still think that's Debian. You know, I think it still counts.
Right. Yeah, I think my progression was something along the lines of Red Hat for a number of years, and then one summer I tried to install Debian and could never get it to quite install. This is quite some time ago. And so that summer, that was my Mandrake summer. So I used that for a while, and then the next release of Debian came out and I was able to finally get it installed. And then pretty much stuck with that for years up until, you know, now, like you, I'm using Ubuntu for most of my stuff. But
yeah. All right. And we both settled on Ubuntu, but yours is extremely tweaked. So you can't even tell it's Ubuntu if you look at it. But it saves time installing. That's my thing with Ubuntu. It's Debian that saves a lot of time configuring things.
Well, so. Especially on a laptop, because I've spent, you know, as fun as it is to tweak and get everything working on a laptop.
Yeah, after 4 or 5 laptops, it does get old.
Yeah, you're like, I just want it to suspend and wake back up. That's all I really want.
All right. Well, hey, Kyle, I will see you in just a couple days. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the Linux Journal Insider for the June 2010 issue. Make sure that you pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-May. And subscribers, if you're listening to this, you already have a copy in your grubby little mitts. Or it's on its way. We hope that you enjoy. Next month, we'll be talking about Linux in the Enterprise. Now, not the Starship Enterprise, although I'm sure that runs Linux. But be sure to tune in again. And then don't forget to visit us at linuxjournal.com. See you next month.